All right. Once again, my name's Toby, and I'm an alcoholic. We have a speaker tonight that I'm looking forward to hearing, but someone else is going to give him an introduction. With that, I give you Mr. Chris H.
What's up, guys? Chris, alcoholic. I was driving here trying to think of, like, some kind of cool little speech to put together to introduce this guy, but, you know, the more I thought about it, the less I really needed to try to think of what I wanted to say. Talking about this guy in front of me, John, most of you guys in here know him. He's a really good guy. He's an inspiration to me. He's actually my first sponsee that I ever had, and remember when I first met him, I wasn't too sure about this guy at all. And there's a lot of things about him that I found that I had within myself too, so I was kind of drawn to him, and I was always giving him a hard time, but like in a positive, productive direction. And it's really, really, really impressive to see his growth and just his development into not only a good recovering individual, but also a good example for other people that are struggling with some of the same things that, you know, myself and some of us in here struggle with. And you know, you're gonna hear it all the time, but this guy really does have a heart of gold, and he's one of those people that he's very selfless. You know, he's very positive, and he's just a really, really good person to be around. And I love you to death, man. I'm real proud of you, bro. So I wanna hear what you have to say. So without any further ado, this is my buddy John Monks, everybody.
Nervous, man. I'm an alcoholic named John. It's crazy. I get emotional when I talk about my recovery, man, because it was quite a ride, man. I was my sobriety date is June 20th, 2011, which was 2 years ago today. And I think about that today, and it seems like it's kind of flown by, but you know, I thought about where I was, man. Even 2 years ago today, I was just coming out of a coma, and it was tough, man. I was in the hospital for about 11 days, but I was born and raised in Palm Beach County, come from a good family. Mom was awesome. She was always there for me no matter what. Had a good dad. They got a divorce when I was two, so I don't remember any of that. So I remember growing up with my mom, you know, and my dad. My dad was in Tampa, mom's in Palm Beach County, where I live, you know, primarily pretty much all the year. And during the summer, I'd go to my dad's house. And I remember starting to go over there when I was two, and I just remember this awesome guy, man. And so it wasn't odd for me, you know. I wasn't that whole, like, oh, my parents aren't together, poor me. It was normal for me, you know. And I didn't look at my friends that had families and say, oh, I wish that was me. I had a good life, man. Dad took care of me. He had some money. Helped my mom out, paid child support, everything was pretty good. Never got to see them fight. They never argued in front of me that I knew of. So I had a pretty good life, man. And I always got in a little bit of trouble throughout school. I remember, you know, like kindergarten, just I was kind of what they'd probably classify as like ADHD, just all over the place. I was always getting in trouble for something. I remember being in the principal's office, being punished and being put under the principal's desk. Like, I remember that. And it was more than once a week. And, but, you know, my mom was always there loving me. She always tried to do everything she could to make sure that, you know, I was taken care of, supported everything I ever did. But as the years went on, it was more and more trouble. Just constantly wanting to get my own way, learning how to manipulate her at the age of like 5 years old to get me what I wanted. Just that personality that, looking back, I never saw, but, you know, within the past 2 years, I figured a lot of that out. But the alcoholic trait was definitely in me from like a little kid, man. Just trying to get my own way. It was all about me. I made it to about ninth grade. I dropped out of school, signed myself out, 16 in ninth grade, which is like insane. I got held back a couple times. But I think the pivotal part of my life, I'm probably going to jump around a little bit, was about the age of 10. I always had a little bit of anger and some rage inside of me, but I remember at 10 years old, we had this like ritual with my family. My grandparents lived in the same neighborhood as me. My grandfather pretty much taught me everything that a man needed to be taught. And I remember like every Friday we would go out to this place called RJ Gators, and you know, they'd give me a dollar, I'd go play some video games, come back. You know, they'd give me another dollar, go play some video games, come back. Well, this was like a Wednesday or something like that. And it was really odd that my grandparents were at my house when I came home. And I remember walking in the door and my grandparents were there, and they were trying to look happy. You know, they were trying to convince me at about 10 years old that everything was good. And they broke the news down to me that my dad had died. But I didn't really react in an upset way, because a week prior to that news, the first time in my entire life, he beat the shit out of me at 10 years old when I was visiting him, and beat me to the point where I had a tooth coming out of my lip. Never put his hands on me once, and I'll never forget that, man. He beat me like nobody should ever be beat. Like, I'm surprised I'm still alive. I remember when I finally came to, I was in what was his girlfriend at the time's arms, and kind of coming to and looking back and seeing a blood outline of my head on the bed. And that's the last thing I remember about my dad. And I never forgave myself for that. But, you know, I didn't forgive him. I didn't want to talk to him. I didn't really give a shit about him from that point on. And that's when my whole life changed. And I remember going back to school, and I seen a girl walking the opposite way from school. And I kind of knew her, and I started talking to her, and she said she was going to the mall. I said, well, shit, school's about to start, man. That sounds pretty interesting. So I wound up going to the woods with her, and we smoked weed for the first time. I was done. That was it. It was a wrap, man. That was the best thing that had ever happened to me, and it was, you know, it was good back in the day. From that point on was drugs and alcohol, and that was from the age of about 11 years old until I was 16 when I signed myself out of school. Nothing positive. I can't remember anything really positive that happened. At the age of 17, I caught a gun charge for shooting up an occupied dwelling with a friend of mine. And they wanted to charge me as an adult, and I had no idea about this inheritance from when my dad died. It had been 7 years. I had no idea I had an inheritance. You know, my mom's still living humbly, trying to make ends meet, working three jobs, couldn't afford an attorney. And at that point, you know, my mom broke down and told me, In the midst of my full-blown addiction, that I had an inheritance. And I got out of trouble that time. And once all the charges were finalized and I was on probation, I started hounding my family for that money. I tore it apart, man. I tore up. That's, you know, my uncle is sitting in here right now. But some of the shit that I had done to my family, like, I can't even put it in words. It was so grimy. I had the whole family in shambles. And the whole time just remembering, like, you know, my dad. That was my cop-out, was my dad. And so it continued on. I blew through a large, large amount of money by the age of about 24. It was a really large amount of money. And I blew through every penny of it by the age of 24. Had no intention of stopping doing what I was doing. It became a way of life from 11 on. You know, I hadn't even developed, you know, social skills and, you know, how to run a life, man. That's all I knew. Didn't want to quit. And, you know, I remember my mom just being miserable. She was never happy, you know, but she continued to try, never gave up on me. Had other family members, never gave up on me, and just still caught all up about myself. So I got kicked out when I was 18, kicked out of my mom's house. Had a huge amount of money, bought a house, bought some vehicles, bought a crap load of fun toys, blew through everything. And like I said, by the age of about 23 or 24, I had lost everything. It was crazy. I really don't want to focus too much on that. So around that time that I'd lost all the money, then I realized I had a problem. I needed to start getting some help. I was in and out of detoxes almost every other weekend, putting myself in there, in and out of long-term, short-term rehabs. It was literally every other week, without over-exaggerating. I remember being in several rehabs in 1 month and just leaving. You know, I'd get in there for a day or two and I'd walk out, sign myself out, think I was good, had no idea what this disease was about, didn't believe I had a disease, and no intention of stopping, man. I just I wanted, I guess, to try to figure out how I could just stay with alcohol and drugs. Like, that's kind of what I was chasing. You know, I only went in there because I was out of money and I was hurting. And it was more often than not. We had a little setup, me and a couple of my buddies. There was a mental facility that took insurance, and there was a mental facility that was county provided. The county provided didn't detox. The one that took insurance detoxed. But if the county provided one was full, they would send people to the insurance provided one. So every couple of days we were calling this place asking for a bed. And if they said no, we would go into the hospital and threaten to kill ourselves. Like, I remember a couple of my buddies, it became like a scam so that we could get detoxed until something was available that we wanted, because we'd go through droughts. Alcohol always being there, obviously, but, you know, other things involved as well that took me down a lot faster. So I'm going to fast forward. I think I was about 25, and keep in mind, like, my dad was an alcoholic, my grandfather, I'm the fourth generation, carries the same name as four, my father, my grandfather, my great-grandfather, and all of us were alcoholics. Other family members, a stepfather who's an alcoholic. So I really never knew that part, though, so I kind of understood, like, these guys were somewhat normal. Like, I knew that other family members that I heard stories were just as crazy as I was were doing well, and I could see it and happy. So I had some of those family members that were convincing me that, you know, there was a better way of life, but I could never just break away long enough to try to get my shit together and let this program work. But at the age of 26, I still really wasn't ready. I was really hard up one day, you know, after my mom paying for so many, long-term treatments. She told me she wasn't going to do it again, but she told me she would give me a train ticket and pay for a detox. And I didn't want it. I was waiting to hopefully, do another scam to get some money, and she called me in the midst of that. And I was sick. I was really sick. I remember, I was puking when she called me. And when she told me that she would pay for the ticket for the train and the detox, I said no. I didn't want it. I didn't want it. I knew 20 minutes from the time I got off the phone with her, I'd be feeling all right again. But within that 20 minutes, the minute before I hung up, she said, "And I'll get you one more fix. Just go." I was done. I knew it was quick, so that 20 minutes didn't even matter anymore. I was getting some money from my mom. So I did it. I remember getting loaded one last time and coming to Tampa, and I was sold on the fact that I had a family member over here that had some time in the program, that I was going to be all right. I really still didn't want to get sober. They say this program's for people who want it. It's not, man. It's for people who are willing to do the work. And I don't think I was quite willing. I know I wasn't willing. So when I came over here, I was starting to come down. When I got off the train, I was picked up by a family member, taken straight to a detox. And in this detox, I met a girl. And, yeah, it became a wild ride. So I met this girl, and I remember getting out and trying to get into a halfway house. And I'm so sick that, like, this girl has to be a backup plan, so my family member picked me up, which was my uncle, picked me up from the detox, took me to the halfway house, and they wanted a drug test. And I knew I couldn't, definitely wasn't going to pass, so I was actually looking forward to failing this drug test. I really was, I'm being honest. Because I knew Kristen was in the car right behind him, and she would let me stay with her, and I would get what I wanted from her. So I failed the drug test, couldn't get in the halfway house. There was other options that I could have done that might have changed the outcome, but I hopped right in the car with her. I was only going to stay with her for 5 days, had the whole family convinced. I'm just going to let them run through my system. That's it. Hang out on the couch, she's got a nice house. So, yeah, we were getting blasted before we even got back to her house, and it was probably a 20-minute drive. Got back to her house, and I remember I was right back into that mentality. I was getting everything I needed from her, and I was using her. I wasn't a very pleasant person. I don't even know why she wanted to be around me. But it wound up being 2.5 months, and in those 2.5 months, I was in a mental facility 3 different times. two different mental facilities. I think it was PIMS or something in St. Pete. Three different times in the same mental facility. They had two locations. I went to two of them once, and I went to one of them another time because they didn't want me back at the two that I had already been to. And I wound up in Tampa Heart Institute twice. First time I was unconscious for a few days. Second time I was in a coma for several. Parents came to make funeral arrangements, which they, when I OD'd and I was in the hospital, family members stopped coming. And that was, you know, a mile, 2 miles from their house that I was at, and they wouldn't come to that hospital. Here I'm in Tampa, and, you know, my family actually flew over here and started making funeral arrangements. It was that bad this last time. And I remember somewhat of my mom kind of being there as I was unconscious. And she told me that my eyes opened when she was praying and they closed quickly, but she knew something was different. And I remember waking up when I came to, I heard the nurse's voice ask me if I was ready to have the apparatus removed from my throat. And I was like, well, I didn't even know what the hell was going on. And started the light started coming in, and the doctor was like, you know, this is twice that we've seen you in less than a month. He's like, you need to do something. And I knew at that point, my reaction, because I'd OD'd so many times that when I come to, my first thing is I check my shorts, a little plastic bin right next to the bed, and I know I'll find something. And this time I told the nurse to grab the shorts and check them, or just throw them the fuck away. It was intense, man. Something happened. You know, I didn't want to get high anymore. It was weird. Like, that mental obsession that they say would be lifted through the steps. For me, I think I was a little more lucky. It was lifted before the steps. But I still had a lot of work to do. I was still, you know, very selfish, insane, nuts, lying, cheating, whatever I could do to get my own way. But I didn't want to get high. And that's when I seen Chris Hubers. And he was a front desk man. He was a bouncer of the Sal. I wound up in the Salvation Army. And I just remember seeing him, man, and being like, this dude's nuts. He's, you know, he's tatted up. He looks like, to me, some of my friends were fucking crazy, you know. And he fit that description, but he was happy. And he was happy, man. And I remember going to him, and he was always busting my balls because I was stealing from the Sal. And, you know, it was his job to make sure that didn't happen, and he did it. But he didn't really get me in trouble for it. You know, he kind of kept it to the side. And I appreciate that because I might have been kicked out and I might not have got this. But I remember sitting at the Sal, still didn't have a sponsor, wasn't working steps, didn't think I needed to, but didn't want to get high. And I remember coming downstairs because I was getting in trouble so often. They give you a white tag, you can't leave the building. So now I'm stuck, all my friends are out doing their thing, and, you know, I'm in my head with this disease. And he started giving me suggestions. I wouldn't ask him to be my sponsor. I didn't want to work steps, but, dude, help me out. What do I do? Here, go read this. And little by little, like, we were working steps. And I remember starting to get some changes, man, the way I felt. And that was huge, man, because there was no way. I used to yell at this guy. He used to call me, hey, you still alive? F you, you know. He's like, just stop. I can't stop. I can't. It's impossible. But yet somehow, you know, working these steps, like, I remember, like, before I really started doing some work, I remember the conversations with my mom, you know, hey, are you doing well? You're still clean. Give me some money. I'm in this friggin' place. You know, I don't want to be here. I'm here because of you guys. Like, at least pay, because they're only paying me $7 a week. And that's like, so selfish, man. But that was me. And through starting to work steps, you know, that same just chaos that was in my head all the time about my past started making sense to me. And as I started working the steps, you know, I think I kind of found God prior to that. You know, like I said, with the mental obsession. And when I woke up, I felt different. Almost like they say that psychic change. Like, I was not thinking about, you know, drugs and alcohol all the time. But through working the steps, I remember on my fourth step, I worked through, you know, what had happened with my dad, you know, because from the time he had beat my ass and I didn't forgive him, that was 7 days later that he was dead. And during that time, I realized he was sick through working my fourth step. and he relapsed. So the 8 years that I knew my father as this amazing person, he was sober through these steps. And the weekend he beat my ass was the weekend that he relapsed and became the demon that he always was that I didn't know about. And that's fucking amazing. To me, that is amazing. And as sad as that was, and as long as I let that hold me back, that's inspiration today. Because if I stop doing this, I'm going to go back to being the way I was, just like he did, and wind up dead. And, you know, these steps had brought so much clarity to my life. And, you know, today, that same mom that I abused for so many years, man, like, calls me for suggestions, which is insane. And like she takes them, and I don't even think about it. I'll be driving in my work truck, like trying to get somewhere, and she'll send me a message about something that's not going right, or you know, she's struggling with, and I'll just shoot off a random suggestion, not put too much thought into it, and go about my day forgetting I even did that. And a couple hours later, get a text from her saying, "Oh my God, how amazing this is. Like, I wish I would have thought about that." And I'm like, "Wow, really?" So it's just nuts, man. It turned me into a different person. You know, the selfish prick that I had been for so many years, confused, you know, letting my past dictate who I was in my present, you know, bottling emotions up, stuffing it, abusing myself and others. Like, that hasn't happened in 2 years, man. And for that, I'm grateful, man, for these rooms and these meetings and these steps. I know it's a little early, man, but I'm very grateful. Everybody in this room, man, I know almost every one of you guys personally, and that's amazing. I'm Doug here, man. But, dude, I get emotional, and a lot of people don't know that about me, man. I still, you know, I like to act like everything's okay, but, dude, I got emotions, man. I get anxiety. I'm not fucking perfect, man, but every day that I try to do the next right thing, you know, I have a sponsor, Diz. He's awesome, man. He gives me some suggestions, and I actually follow him, you know, and things turn out right. Well, they turn out the way they're supposed to, and I kind of develop acceptance over the way they're supposed to be, even if it's not my way. I go out of my way to help others, sponsees. You know, it's been causing a little bit of stress because I'm working some crazy hours right now. I'm making really good money. I came over here with nothing. Board shorts, burn holes in it from nodding out, tied up wife beater. So, man. You know, life was rough when I got here. And I've got so many materialistic things, and they don't really matter. You know, I'm not saying that because that's not what keeps me sober. Without this program, I'll throw everything I got away in a heartbeat. But, you know, I got the nice things. That's not the gifts of recovery. That's just, you know, some things that I acquired through hard work. But, you know, I'll work until 7:30 at night from 7:30 in the morning. And the first thing I'll do is hit a meeting or work with a sponsee. As much as I want to go home and take my clothes off, filthy, dirty, I want to go home and relax. But I don't. I put my recovery first, and then I go home and take care of myself. And, you know, that's what keeps me sober. Is doing for others, doing shit that I don't want to do, man, on a daily basis. Because when I start to do what I want to do, I don't feel like I do right now. I don't want to be up here. You know, I do want to be up here. The old me would never have done something like this. I would have thought of a reason to get out of this in a heartbeat and did something that I would consider more fun, man. But, you know, that's the stuff that keeps me sober. And, you know, today, I have a peace of mind. I can find peace when I'm by myself. Before, it was never healthy for me to be by myself, man. And today I seek that peace. You know, I meditate. I work with others. I have a sponsor. I talk to other alcoholics several times a day. So many people, random texts, man, just off the wall fun stuff that, you know, really isn't even about recovery. But in a way it is, because all of us are doing the same thing, man. And that's what keeps me sober. My network is a huge part of my recovery. And meetings, you know, they say meeting makers make it. No, work fucking steps and you'll make it. But life is good, you know. Like I said, had absolutely nothing when I came here. I got 3 vehicles parked in my driveway. I've got a home that I pay for, an awesome girlfriend, a puppy. a job, you know what I mean? Family, friends. But without this program, I'd have none of that shit. And, you know, for that, I'm truly grateful, and that's all I got.
Good job. John M.